Both of our testaments this morning deal with the issue of being alone. The Genesis story talks about Jacob wrestling with an angel over the fear of facing his brother. And in Matthew's gospel, Jesus is withdrawing to a lonely place upon hearing of the death of his cousin John the Baptist, which has just preceded this story in Matthew's gospel. Both of these are sermons in themselves. The story of Jacob and wrestling with an angel is a phenomenal story that sometime I'll just touch on that because it's really about identification, identity formation, and who we are and who we become and what happens to us in our new state, even though the old is still part of us. That's for another time. But I'm going to focus on this morning is the issue of being in a lonely place because the phrase is used twice in Matthew's story, which tells me that he wants us to pay attention to the description. It's used to describe a place, but it's also used to describe a condition inside of us. If you've ever experienced real loss in your life, if you've lost somebody that you've loved, a husband, a wife, child, spouse, grandparent, mother, father, if you've loved somebody and they've left, the death of a dream maybe, the loss of a career opportunity, the loss of serious held dreams and expectations, you can relate than to this desire to find a place that is apart and away from everybody else. It's almost instinctive upon us as human beings as a response that when we've been emotionally jolted, the first thing that we really want to do is find a place to be alone. And that's what I've seen throughout my career with people in church. When they go through a really hard time, the first thing that often happens is they drop out of their social circles and they drop out of church for a while because they literally go within inside themselves. And this seems to be the case instinctively in us as human beings to find a lonely place where we can go to figure out what's just happened to us and how to get through it. And that's what Jesus is trying to do, I think, in our story. He's trying to find a place that he can withdraw and rethink and think on what's just happened to his cousin and what this might mean for his life as he goes forward in his own ministry, right? The only difference for him is that he can't find a lonely place. He wants one, but he can't find it because there are crowds that are pressing in upon him. They've heard of his arrival, and they don't want him to disappear. Maybe they're worried that if they don't come after him, something bad will happen to him as well. Maybe they want to provide comfort for him. Who knows all the reasons that they come out, but they come out nonetheless. And we don't know all of the reasons, but they followed him for all kinds of reasons. Now, what's interesting is Jesus' response to this. To this thing that's happened to him where he wants to withdraw and then all of these people start coming to him because the gospel states that he had compassion on them. And if it had been me, for example, and I had just gone through something like this, I don't know, but maybe I wouldn't have been so gracious about it all. I'd probably been a little bit annoyed and angry, kind of like, hey man, please just leave me alone for a while. I need a break. And yet all these folks keep coming and they keep expecting me to be there for them. I'd probably be thinking something along the lines, hey, come on, man, leave me alone for just a little bit, and then I'll come back out. I need a break. What do you mean you need me to feed you today and you need me to talk to? Didn't you hear? They just killed my cousin, for God's sakes. Give me a break, man. But that's not what Jesus does. He may have thought that in his head. He may have desired to withdraw, but instead of going to that lonely place, he has compassion on the crowds, it says, and he goes out and he involves himself in their lives and he heals their sick. You ever notice in the Bible how it never really tells us what people are thinking so much as what they're doing? It doesn't tell us what Jesus thought of this or that or what he's feeling. It just reports on what he did because the only way to change a feeling is to change the way you're acting. The only way to change your thoughts is to change your behaviors. So Jesus forgets about finding a lonely place, recognizing that's not going to be in store for him, and he begins to reach out of himself and starts to heal all kinds of people, and he starts hanging out with even more people. And before you know it, evening has come. The day has completely passed, probably taking him out of himself completely. The disciples approach Jesus, and they say, "This is a lonely place, Lord. And the day is now over, so please send the crowds away." Now, what's interesting to me is that the disciples describe this place in this manner. They say it's a lonely place, but it's anything but lonely. Jesus and the disciples are surrounded by people. They can't be alone. They're demanding to eat. And Jesus, not wanting to let them down, tells them, you know, go ahead, feed these people. They've come all the way out here. Do something. And I think the reason the disciples describe this as a lonely place is because they're just milling about. They don't have anything to do. Everybody's focused on Jesus. Everybody's listening to Jesus. And they're kind of just wondering, what do I do? What do I do? The disciples, they want to eat. They're hungry. Their stomachs are rumbling. They're like, I don't care about all these people. I'm just wanting to get home now. And they don't want to be bothered with feeding the crowd. And that's the crux of the problem, you see, is that when we go into a place that's lonely, it becomes lonely simply because we cut others off from us when we are hurting. And God knows that it's not a good thing for us to stay in a lonely place. From the get-go, God created us so that we would not be alone. It's not good for the human being, God said, that they should be alone, because it leads to loneliness. And this is something that God knows. So God gives to Jesus a crowd of people to take care of. He gives them a task, something that can actually heal his hurt by getting him out of his own self. It's the only way I know of, really, to heal from sadness and hurt. The more you dwell on it, the more you think on it, it doesn't help it go away. You may need to do that so that you can process the loss through tears and all of that that you may not want to share with everybody, but the only way to really heal is to get out of yourself and go and find out what somebody else needs. It works. It just does instantly. And I'll close you with this story that I think is pretty cool in light of what's been happening to the children in our country and in other countries. There was a story of a children's clinic in Dusseldorf, Germany, in the early part of the 20th century, before modern medicine had really had a chance to take hold, before there were things such as antibiotics and other things like that, when it was still a 50-50 proposition. If you go to a doc, you would likely die, as if you didn't go to a doc, you'd likely die. It was a toss of the coin. Anyway, in this one particular clinic in Dusseldorf, they took care of little kids, babies, infants, especially children who were wasting away and ended up dying with no known cause listed on the chart. It wasn't unusual to see on their chart the word hopeless written on their admissions charts, because there was no known cause for what brought them in, and there was no known cure. Later, we discovered it was called a phenomenon, failure to thrive. It had a lot to do with human contact or the lack thereof. There was one doctor who stood out from the rest of the crew, who was really a beacon of hope to all of those in the hospital, and especially these children, and his name was Dr. Fritz Talbot. And the one thing that made him different from everybody else in terms of his colleagues was that he had lost one of his own children when the child was very young to an unknown cause, which made him pretty sensitive to sick children in a way that other doctors just wouldn't be able to relate, because they hadn't had that experience. And he found more success in dealing with these sick children than any of his other colleagues, any of the other doctors. And for many years, medical interns would follow him around from ward to ward, trying to learn what he knew, trying to learn what he could do that was so different than all of the other docs in terms of handling these children. And one of the interns took some time to watch as Dr. Talbot wrote down his observations on the chart. And he observed that every time that Dr. Talbot came across a child where traditional medication and therapies had failed, he would take the child's chart and just scrawl on it. But it was almost impossible. If you've ever gotten a doctor's script and taken it to a pharmacy, I'm always amazed they give me the right medicine, right? You know, you look at this and go, what is this? Well, this intern didn't know what he was writing in the chart, but over time, watching these children, watching Dr. Talbot with them, he saw a remarkable improvement in their health and their vitality, that they came back from the edge of death and began to thrive again. And finally, he asked a head nurse to interpret this unreadable prescription that the doc kept putting on the charts, and she started to chuckle and said, oh, that stands for Old Anna. She pointed to a grandmotherly woman seated in a large rocking chair, cradling a little baby in her lap and just holding it and rocking it back and forth, just gently rubbing its back, rubbing its head. Whenever we have a baby for whom everything else has failed, we turn the child over to Old Anna. She has more success than all of the doctors and the nurses in this institution combined at healing children. Compassion and love is what Old Anna and this doctor had to give. No pill, no prescription that had to be filled, simply just holding the child in their arms, rocking it and loving it and telling it so and giving it that healing touch, that healing touch. And compassion and love can only be found when we get out of ourselves, and it can only be learned, too, when we've gone through our own hurts. You don't know what it's like to hurt until you've hurt yourself. It's hard to identify. But once you do, you know what it's like. You've got empathy now. You have an ability to connect in a way that nobody else can, which is why, in spite of our natural desire to want to withdraw to a lonely place, God continually comes into our lives and breaks in and says, but I got one more person for you to take care of. I got one more person who needs you. I got one more person who could use your help. Is that all right? And God keeps doing this to us to remind us that that's how we heal, by getting out of ourselves. He gives us these opportunities that we experience in loss and hurt into something that can become meaningful, purposeful, and giving hope to others. And in so doing, we become alive again, because we become givers of life. We become givers of life, which is an amazing miracle when you think about it. The ability to infuse that desire to continue in life to somebody that doesn't feel it. I think that's the miracle, really, of the story of the feeding of the 5,000. Not that they somehow found the food and were able to share it. That's cool. That's great. I'm glad we share it with one another. That's a good thing. But I think that this story really is about the miracle that we all can perform. It's a miracle that we all can perform, which is simply the miracle of looking at who's next to us or around us and extending to them compassion and care. It's the miracle that we can all perform every single day. And if Jesus was here with us today, I think he'd probably be saying to us, just like he did to the disciples, go out and feed them. You do it. You can do this. Amen.
Goes on in endless song, above earth's lamentation. I hear the sweet, though far off, hymn that hails a new creation. Through all the tumult and the strife, I hear the music ringing. It finds an echo in my soul. How can I keep from singing? What though my joys and comforts die,
how can